Controversies over the federal courts have often marked turning points in American history, including the Civil War, the Industrial Revolution, the New Deal, and the Civil Rights Movement. NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports on the roots of the current struggle over judges.
Conservative religious groups are incensed about court rulings involving abortion, gay rights, stem cell research, and end-of-life decisions. They are pouring their time, money, and energy into an attack on the courts. It's an attack that has some in the GOP worried, and it's an attack that has galvanized liberal groups into fundraising and grassroots action of their own. The charge against the courts was on display this month at a conference called Confronting the Judicial War on Faith, and last Sunday at an event called Justice Sunday. House Republican leader Tom DeLay spoke at the first event on tape.
These are not examples of a mature society, but of a judiciary run amok.
But it was the lesser-known speakers at both events who provided the fire and brimstone. Dr. William Donahue, president of the Catholic League.
Do we need a constitutional amendment which would say this? No act of Congress can be overturned by the Supreme Court unless it's a unanimous decision. That'll stop judicial activism right in its tracks.
Phyllis Schlafly, president of the Eagle Forum.
Contrary to what they've all been taught in law school for the last generation, the Constitution is not what the Supreme Court says it is.
Dr. Edwin Vieira, author of How to Dethrone the Imperial Judiciary.
This is the legalistic equivalent of Marxism, Leninism, Stalinism.
And many of the conservative religious leaders who called for the impeachment of judges.
What it is time to do is impeach judges.
The next one is Justice Kennedy. He should be the poster boy for an impeachment.
I'm just in favor of mass impeachment, if that's what it takes.
That last speaker calling for mass impeachment was Michael Schwartz, chief of staff to Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. This is hardly the first time in American history when American courts have become the center of hot controversy. In 1857, the Supreme Court's decision in the Dred Scott case, defining slaves as property, led to the splitting of the Democratic Party and the election of Abraham Lincoln. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, the court found itself again in the eye of the storm. This time, the conservative court was seen as firmly in the pocket of industrial barons, with its decisions invalidating minimum wage and maximum hour laws. Legal historian Melvin Yourofsky of Virginia Commonwealth University.
This is a time when you do have a lot of widespread antagonism, not just the Supreme Court, but the courts in general. Theodore Roosevelt is proposing that judges could be recalled by popular ballot. Louis Brandeis, before he goes on the court, gives a famous speech in which he says the judges are totally ignorant of modern economic conditions.
By 1937, the country was in the midst of the Great Depression. President Franklin Roosevelt was trying desperately to get the economy back on its feet. But the Supreme Court, by 5-4 votes, was striking down his New Deal legislation. With the Social Security Act and the National Labor Relations Act in the wings awaiting court consideration, Roosevelt announced what came to be known as his court-packing plan. He wanted to expand the number of justices on the court.
The court has been acting not as a judicial body, but as a policy-making body.
But Roosevelt miscalculated public reaction to tinkering with the independence of the judiciary. And although the Democrats had large majorities in both houses of Congress, the plan went down to ignominious defeat. Though Roosevelt lost the battle, as the saying goes, he won the war. By the time he died 8 years later, he had appointed all but one member of the court, and the New Deal had been upheld. The Supreme Court's decision a decade later calling for school desegregation in the South led to riots and bloodshed, but the country stood behind the court. In the 1960s, the court's one-person, one-vote decision, its decision banning spoken prayer in public schools, and its decision requiring that accused criminals be warned of their rights, all of these led to a drive to impeach Chief Justice Earl Warren. Conservative groups bought billboards all over the country. The John Birch Society weighed in against Warren. But the only serious effort at impeachment was launched against Justice William O. Douglas and was fueled in large part by his many marriages. On a separate track, religious adherents have often been active in American policy debates, as Stanford University historian David Kennedy observes.
I would give it much credit for a wave of reform sentiment that swept over American society in the mid-19th century, including most famously, of course, the campaign for the abolition of slavery. But that's that same religious sentiment that welled up in the Second Great Awakening also colored movements for prison reform, for women's rights, for educational reform, for the temperance movement.
But John Butler, dean of the Yale School of Graduate Studies, says the current attack on the judiciary is a new phenomenon.
It's unique in the partisanship by which the courts are under siege by religious groups.
Butler is the former director of the Yale Center for Advanced Study of Religion.
Here there is an open attack, not so much on a specific action of the court, but on the court generally. And it's also fueled by religion. And this makes an extraordinarily potent and dangerous mix, because it really attacks the legitimacy of the courts. It really attacks the nature of the federal constitution and the idea that there are three branches of government.
Columbia University legal history professor Eben Moglen observes that until relatively recently, evangelicals and other highly religious people stayed away from politics.
People who, for reasons of their religious conviction, used to regard politics, all politics, as ungodly and outside their sphere of interest in life, can only be held in electoral politics by motivating them deeply to believe that one side is on the side of God and the other side is not.
Speakers at the recent conferences on the judiciary seem to acknowledge that. Here, for example, is Dr. Donahue, the president of the Catholic League.
We will get involved in our society, and we won't be told to shut up and give it over to the secular left. Who are they to say that I don't have a right to freedom of speech? That's mentioned in the First Amendment of the Constitution.
And Don Feder of Vision America is quoted as saying that whatever prominent Republican is willing to take the lead on the issue of judges and impeachment, that person will probably have the Republican presidential nomination in 2008. Some prominent Republicans dissent. Former Republican Senator John Danforth, an ordained minister who identifies himself as pro-life, recently wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times in which he said he sees no problem with people or churches that are politically active.
But I think that there is a big difference between individuals being involved in politics and even groups of individuals being involved in politics on one hand, and a political party transforming itself into the political extension of a sectarian view.
Columbia Law School's Eben Moglen says that Republicans have made significant gains in the last two decades because Democrats were seen as wandering too far to the left and abandoning the center.
The current squalling about the federal judiciary's supposed radicalism is the onset of that problem for the Republican Party, which has racked up debts to the evangelical right that it can neither afford to welch on nor to repay.
The irony of the attack on the judiciary is that the courts are currently dominated by Republican appointees. 10 of the 13 federal appeals courts have a majority of Republican appointments. And 7 of the 9 Supreme Court justices were appointed by Republican presidents. Indeed, in the recent Schiavo controversy, not one Supreme Court justice, and that includes the most conservative members of the court, indicated any desire to intervene. Again, Yale Dean John Butler.
The Republican New Christian Right criticism of their own judges and of, it could be said, their own Supreme Court really highlight this incredible tension of an immoral decision, from their point of view, being made by following the rule of law. And this is a classic tension in the judicial system, and frankly, it's a classic tension in American politics and how we discuss the nature of our public and private life.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.